So we're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, Divinity and Divine Service. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. So I've been asked to speak this morning, so please tolerate my offences and lack of scholarly erudition. Two verses, chapter text 1 and 2. So we just got one on the board. So we'll chant this one together and then we'll go on to chapter 2, verse number 2. Translation.
Ugrashava Sutta Goswami, the son of Ramaharshan, being fully satisfied by the perfect questions of the Brahmanas, thanked them and thus attempted to reply. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The sages of Namasharanya asked Sutta Goswami 6 questions, and so he is answering them one by one. And that's the purport. So we'll go on to the next one, next verse, and then we'll cover today's topics. Sutta Uvacha. Join in if you want to. Yang pravrajantam upanetam upetya krityam. Probably best we just listen. Yang pravajantam anupetyam apetya krityam dvaipayano biraha katara ajuhava prute tutang matratatai putreti tang mayatata, excuse me, pruteti tang mayataya taravo binedhus tang sarva bhuta hridayang munim anatosmi. Translation. Srila Sutta Goswami said, "Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto that great sage, Shukadeva Goswami, who can enter the hearts of all. When he went away to take up the renounced order of life, sannyas, leaving home without undergoing reformation by the sacred thread, all the ceremonies observed by the higher castes, his father, Vyasadeva, fearing separation from him, cried out, 'Oh, my son!' Indeed, only the trees, which were absorbed in the same feelings of separation, echoed in response to the bereaved father." Srila Prabhupada's purport. The institution of Varna and Ashram prescribes many regulative duties to be observed by its followers. Such duties enjoin that a candidate willing to study the Vedas must approach a bona fide spiritual master and request acceptance as his disciple. The sacred thread is the sign of those who are competent to study the Vedas from the Acharya or the bona fide spiritual master. Sri Shukadeva Goswami did not undergo such purificatory ceremonies because he was a liberated soul from his very birth. Generally, a man is born as an ordinary being, and by the purificatory process, he is born for the second time. When he sees a new light and seeks direction for spiritual progress, he approaches a spiritual master for instruction in the Vedas. The spiritual master accepts only the sincere inquirer as his disciple and gives him the sacred thread. In this way, a man becomes twice born, or dvija. After qualifying as a dvija, one may study the Vedas, and after becoming well versed in the Vedas, one becomes a vipra. A vipra, or a qualified Brahman, thus realizes the absolute and makes further progress in spiritual life until he reaches the Vaishnava stage. The Vaishnava stage is the postgraduate status of a Brahman. A progressive Brahman must necessarily become a Vaishnava, for a Vaishnava is a self-realized learned Brahman. Srila Shukadeva Goswami was a Vaishnava from the beginning. Therefore, there was no need for him to undergo all the processes of the Varnashram institution. Ultimately, the aim of Varnashram Dharma is to turn a crude man into a pure devotee of the Lord or a Vaishnava. Of course, when it says man, it's talking of the species and not the gender. It's all inclusive. We have to make that clear. Becomes a Vaishnava. Anyone who therefore becomes a Vaishnava, accepted by the first class Vaishnava, or Uttama Adhikari Vaishnava. Let me read that again. Anyone therefore who becomes a Vaishnava, accepted by a first class Vaishnava, or Uttama Adhikari Vaishnava, is already considered a Brahmin, regardless of his birth or past deeds. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted this principle and recognized Srila Haridas Thakur as the Acharya of the Holy Name, although Thakur Haridas appeared in a Mohammedan family. In conclusion, Srila Shukadeva Goswami was a born Vaishnava, and therefore Brahmanism was included in him. He did not have to undergo any ceremonies. Any low-born person, be he a Kirata, Huna, Andhra, Pulinda, Pulkasha, Abhira, Shumba, Yavana, Kasha, or even lower, can be delivered by the highest transcendental position. Can be delivered to the highest transcendental position by the mercy of the Vaishnavas. Srila Shukadeva Goswami was the spiritual master of Sri Suta Goswami, who therefore offers his respectful obeisances unto Srila Shukadeva Goswami before he begins his answers to the questions of the sages at Namisharanya. Om Maginata Marandasya Janang Janasalakaya Chakshura Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chitanyamana Vishnang Shtapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupakatamayam Dharati Svabhatantikam. So I'll read the two translations again. Ugrashava Shruta Goswami, the son of Ramaharshan, being fully satisfied by the perfect questions of the Brahmins, thanked them and thus attempted to reply. Srila Suta Goswami said, "Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto that great sage, Shukadeva Goswami, who can enter the hearts of all." When he went away to take up the renounced order of life, sannyas, leaving home, without undergoing reformation by the sacred thread, or the ceremonies observed by the higher castes, his father, Vyasadeva, fearing separation from him, cried out, "Oh, my son!" Indeed, only the trees, which were absorbed in the same feelings of separation, echoed in response to the bereaved father. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamti Namane Nishte Sarasvati Dev Gauravani Pachane Nivishesha Sundavari Prashtya Chaya Satari. Hare Krishna. So we'll just take up the clue given by Srila Prabhupada in the first purport. He says, very briefly, the sages of Naimisharanya asked Suta Goswami 6 questions, and so he is answering them one by one. So let's just look at those questions again. It's a quick review. Which happened to be in the previous chapter. If any of you are following on gadgets, it's text 9. The first question. Please, therefore, being blessed with many years, explain to us in an easily understandable way what you have ascertained to be the absolute and ultimate good for the people in general. Question number 2. O Sutta Goswami, we are eager to hear. We are eager to learn about the personality of Godhead and his incarnations. Please explain to us those teachings imparted by previous masters, Acharyas, for one is uplifted both by speaking them and by hearing them. There are many varieties of scriptures, and in all of them there are many prescribed duties which can be learned only after many years of study in their various divisions. Therefore, O sage, please select the essence of all these scriptures and explain it for the good of all living beings, that by such instruction their hearts may be fully satisfied. Who is there desiring deliverance from the vices of the age of quarrel who is there desiring deliverance from the vices of the age of quarrel who is not willing to hear the virtuous glories of the Lord? O wise Sutta, please narrate to us the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Godhead's multi-incarnations. Such auspicious adventures and pastimes of the Lord, the Supreme Controller, are performed by his internal powers. And the final question, which is the last verse of the previous chapter. Since Sri Krishna, the Absolute Truth, the master of all mystic powers, has departed for his own abode, please tell us to whom the religious principles have now gone for shelter. So that's the six questions. So the first response from Sutta Goswami is to thank the sages for their questions. Sometimes in class, or even on the street sometimes, we say, well, that's a nice question. We thank the audience or the inquirer. That's a very nice question. And sometimes it's to give ourselves a little bit extra time to think. That's a good question. I'm glad you asked that. The politicians are always doing that, aren't they? And then they don't answer the question. But the devotee is equipped to actually answer the question. The pure devotees are fully equipped to answer both material and spiritual questions. But the pure devotees, they see what is relevant question and what is irrelevant question. So the vast bulk of the Vedas, we're informed by Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas, the vast bulk of the Vedas is actually material questions and answers. How to live in the material world. All the yajnas and sacrifices, and you offer oblations and this demigod, this and that, various rituals, all these things. And that's not relevant to spiritual life. It's how to live happily in the material world as much as one can, because one can never actually be happy in the material world. When one understands one can't be happy in the material, then he's ready to inquire and find out who is a spiritual master. As long as we have some hopes for happiness in the material world, we're not really quite ready to fully embrace the instructions of the spiritual master. But nevertheless, people are pious. People are pious, take up some spiritual path or religious path, but generally it's materially motivated. But in this case, the questions are of a very high caliber. Very high caliber. And this is the first six questions. Because then we go on to Sutta Goswami begins to explain the exchange between Shukadeva Goswami and all the assembled sages in a different place, different time. So it's questions and answers within questions and answers within questions and answers. But all these questions and answers are glorifiable. The questions are very glorious and the answers are glorious. And in this unfolding of questions and answers, what happens? The Supreme Lord himself manifests himself as the book Bhagavat via those questions and answers. So this is inconceivable. How the Lord himself manifests via the questions and answers of the sages. So the first thing that Sutta Goswami, Srila Sutta Goswami, what is the first thing he says? Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto that great sage, Shukadeva Goswami,
So the first thing he does, he offers his, not pranams, they're more than respects. He's actually acknowledging his complete dependence on the great sage Shukadev Goswami. And this is the key to spiritual life. It isn't just the book Bhagavat, it's also the person Bhagavat. We can't approach the book Bhagavat without the blessings of the person Bhagavat. And the person Bhagavat, in this case, is Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. He has done such a wonderful service to the whole universe in making his insight and the insights of the Acharyas available along with the verses of Bhagavatam. Without those purports and insights, Bhagavatam would be opaque. We'd pick up a few bits here and there, but only because we have practiced to some degree on the spiritual path. Without that, without progress on the spiritual path, Srimad Bhagavatam is postgraduate. First of all, Bhagavad Gita. And we all know how many editions of Bhagavad Gita have been around for the past 100 or more years. Hundreds and hundreds of editions, in English alone. So many. And as Prabhupada says, how many actually made devotees of Sri Krishna? None. So it requires that the insight and blessings of the pure devotee, and Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, as it is made thousands, tens of thousands of devotees, and continues to do so, and will continue to do so, because it's presenting Bhagavad Gita as it is. Because Krishna is central to Bhagavad Gita. Just as Krishna is central to the Bhagavat Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam. But we don't jump in. You can't jump in straight away to the 10th canto. Prabhupada chastises us so much for that. We want to hear about Krishna, but we don't understand Krishna's position. We misunderstand and make offenses. So this gradual progression through all the 9 cantos, up at the 10th canto, where we hear Lord Krishna's pastimes, understanding who Krishna is, not just with our intelligence, which is very limited, but by following the insights and blessings and explanation of the Acharyas. And not just in our present line, but the histories of the Srimad Bhagavatam, they make very plain that the most sagacious, the greatest personalities in the universe, recognize Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, so many pastimes. It isn't as if just one little sect is claiming Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The whole Bhagavat is brimming over with appreciations of the Supreme Lord, either in his Vishnu form and ultimately in the 10th canto as Sri Krishna. So this offering of obeisances to the Acharya is the most important. It's the key to our spiritual life. One cannot get anywhere in spiritual life if one lacks humility. If one lacks the honesty to recognize one's complete dependence upon the blessings of the Acharya. Not possible. Even when we come before the deity in the temple, what is it that we say? What do we say? We don't say Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. We don't say that. We don't even say Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. We don't even say the Panchatattva mantra. We offer our obeisances to Guru. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharne Nirvishesha Sunyavari Pascha Chada Satarni. Why do we do that? Not just to pray for the mercy of the spiritual master, but coming before Krishna, there's different ways it's an opportunity for introspection. The whole path of spiritual life is one of introspection. But you come before Krishna and glorify Krishna's pure devotee, Krishna, you're in the parampara, you're glorifying my pure devotee, therefore Krishna takes notice. Krishna takes notice because we glorify his pure devotee. We understand Krishna is more pleased by those who worship his pure devotee than he is for those who worship himself. So
it isn't just an empty glorification. We have to recognize our dependence upon the mercy of the pure devotee. That's why in recent years, many of the older disciples of Prabhupada have urged succeeding generations to observe before kirtan, to observe the pranam mantras to Srila Prabhupada and Panchatattva mantra. This keeps coming up because we still see it doesn't go on. Even those who should know better, even sometimes God brothers, kirtan, it's essential. It isn't a ceremony, it isn't a ritual. It's to pray for the blessings of the Acharya. And Prabhupada himself says, without chanting the Panchatattva mantra before we chant Hare Krishna, our chanting has no effect. We might get some praise, we might get some glorification, but it doesn't have effect. We need the mercy. We can't chant Hare Krishna even. We chant Hare Krishna, but is the holy name there? Is the Lord himself there? No. We're full of offenses. If the Lord himself was there, if we could perceive the Lord in his holy name, we'd be falling in ecstasy. Si Si Radha Kukulanda, Sita Ram Lakshmana Hanuman, Si Si Gaur Nitai Ki Jai. And so too at the end of a kirtan, when kirtan is over here in the temple, we glorify with the what are they called?
Those prayers?
Pramadvani. Pramadvani prayers. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahansa, etc. And that recognizes, it's a recognition of our lineage, it's a reminder of where our dependence lies. It's actually a statement of our whole lineage all the way back to Sri Krishna. It's very important. It isn't part of a ceremony. Just being in the temple the past few days, I've noticed sometimes at the end of the Gaura Arti, it's Jai Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda, Jai here, Jai there, but no Pramavati prayers. So it starts with a little chip, and the chip grows, becomes a crack, and before you know it, falling apart. Everything begins with a crack. The biggest dam in the world that hold back those billions of gallons of water, sometimes they do break. They do, sometimes. And these days you can see sometimes on YouTube the effect of a dam breaking. My goodness. But where does it begin? With a little crack. A tiny crack. Oh, it's just a crack. No, patch it up, because that crack will grow. And conversely, the pure devotee, he gives us a little crack. He opens things up so we can... Oh. His mercy begins as a little crack. And if we open ourselves to that mercy, that crack will grow and grow until our old material existence is smashed to pieces. So sometimes there are those who come before the deity, they don't want that. They don't want that smashing. We want some facility. So one doesn't go to the sages and ask for material blessings. That's foolishness. That's stupidity. But many do. And perhaps we do. Oh, Prabhupada, please come in. We want this, we want that. Or we go before the deities and asking this and that. It's a waste of our time. So all the sages are gathered here in Namisharanya. They're not asking for material blessings. And neither would Sutta Goswami. Would he give them? But he's not there to give material blessings. He's there to answer their... part of a yagya, a sacrifice. So let's just look at the Prabhupada's purport. Prabhupada says halfway to the purport, he said that the Institute of Vanashram is to turn a crude man or a crude lady. And help them in spiritual life until they reach the Vaishnava stage. So the whole topic of Varnashram is a very... it's concerning a lot of devotees. I'm not going to go into that topic. It needs individuals who are fully surrendered to the instructions of the and guidance of the acharyas. Prabhupada even once said upstairs when George Harrison asked what would happen to our movement, what will happen to this movement when Prabhupada's gone. Prabhupada had just gone to the bathroom. What's going to happen to this movement when Prabhupada leaves? Yogeshwar recounts this, and I don't know what the answers were, but Srila Prabhupada overheard the question, and when he returned from the bathroom, gone to wash his hands or whatever, and he said, it will go on by revelation. So it's not all kind of lied out, well, you know, here it all is. It's all here, actually, everything's here. But we don't have the insight or the perception to see the answer. Everything is here. Here is the personality of Godhead himself, right here, in the form of the Srimad Bhagavatam. But do we see? Do we see the holy name? Do we perceive the holy names when we're chanting Hare Krishna? We get in the way. We're always in the way of ourselves. We're looking at our shadow and we're saying, why can't I see the sun? Well, we've got to turn around. But we're absorbed in the shadow. And the whole material energy is the shadow. We're absorbed in the shadow energy of the Lord. So the Bhagavatam is a wonderful, gives one access to see beyond the shadow and see through the eyes of the great devotees. As always happens, I churn out a few printouts and think, well, I'll read this, but it never seems to go that way. This is interesting. In the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, Srila Prabhupada is referring to Chaitanya Charitamrita. And in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, chapter 16, Prabhupada says, he writes, there were six questions put by the sages of Naimisharanya to Sutta Goswami. And Sutta Goswami explained or answered the six questions in Srimad Bhagavatam. There is a verse in the Vedic literature in which Lord Shiva says, as far as Bhagavatam is concerned, I may know it, or Shukadeva Goswami or Vyasadeva may know it, or we may not know it. But actually, Bhagavatam is to be understood by devotional service and from a devotee, and not by one's own intelligence or by academic commentaries. So this is Lord Shiva saying this. There are many with material desires who go to Lord Shiva for the blessings, whether they're ravanas or so many materialists in the past go to Lord Shiva. And he's very kind. He gives those blessings. But when it comes to spiritual insights, Lord Shiva, he lays it down as it is. I'll just read it again. As far as Bhagavatam is concerned, Lord Shiva says, I may know it, or Shukadeva or Vyasadeva may know it, or we may not know it. But actually, Bhagavatam is to be understood by devotional service and from a devotee, and not by one's own intelligence or by academic commentaries. So the person delivering the Bhagavatam is Shukadeva Goswami, to whom Sutta Goswami offers his obeisances. I'll just read here a little from Prabhupada's purport in the ninth canto, referring to Shukadeva Goswami. I was listening to the class, was it yesterday? Some question about... hearing about the lineage of kings. Was that yesterday or the day before? Yesterday. It was yesterday, okay.
Now, Jaini Tai was giving class, wasn't he? Yeah. So the question came up, you know, do we? Who wants to look at these lists of kings? Well, this is relevant, what we're going to read here. But one of the qualifications of a Shastra being a Purana is it has to include the lineage of kings. It also has to include an account of cosmology. There are certain topics that have to be covered for it to be a Purana. So even though that Purana may not dwell on that topic or go into great detail, still it has to be included. And some Puranas go into great detail about cosmology, Bhagavatam, not a lot. Because the Bhagavatam's gift is the pastimes, the personality of Godhead, which other Puranas don't go into in such great detail. So we're in the ninth canto here. I didn't make a note of the verse. It's chapter that deals with the lineage of Bharat Maharaj. I'll read the verse. King Nipa begot a son named Brahmadatta through the womb of his wife Kritvi, who was a daughter of Shuka. And Brahmadatta, who was a great yogi, begot a son named Visvaksena through the womb of his wife Sarasvati. So Shuka is mentioned here. Now in the verse, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, the Shuka mentioned here is different from the Shukadev Goswami who spoke Srimad Bhagavatam. So we think, well, how is it relevant? Now just follow through. Shukadev Goswami, the son of Vyasadeva, is described in great detail in the Brahma Vaivarta Purana. Anyone got a copy of the Brahma Vaivarta Purana? We don't think we have that. You can catch it online. Someone's done a translation somewhere. There it is said that Vyasadeva maintained the daughter of There it is said that Vyasadeva maintained the daughter of Jabali as his wife, and that after they performed penances together for many years, he placed his seed in her womb. The child remained in the womb of his mother for 12 years. And when the father asked the son to come out, the son replied that he would not come out unless he were completely liberated from the influence of Maya. Those of you ladies who've had children, any of you had anything beyond the usual 9 months? What's the maximum a lady generally holds a child? 10 months? 10? Come on, ladies. 9. 9 is normal. 9 and a couple of weeks. Even 10 months is very rare. Okay. Huh? Yeah. So here we have 12 years. Any of you ladies fancy carrying a child for 12 years? And the anxiety of the husband. Oh my God, he's not out yet. Come on, it's been 3 years now. Come on, come on. But it's interesting that it says Vyasadeva planted his seed in his wife's, in the womb of his wife, after many years of penances. So the Garbha Samskara that Srila Prabhupada instructs his Grihastha disciples to do is chanting 64 rounds. And those devotees who've had children will say they see the difference in the child of those children who were born after Garbha Samskara, 64 rounds, and those who were observed the license of married life but didn't do the Garbha Samskara. There's a difference. You can see it. It unfolds as the life, not as a little baby, but as the life unfolds, there's a big difference. Look. This is very important. But it wasn't 64 rounds that Vyasadeva and his wife did. It was years of penance. Why? Because they're praying for a great soul to take birth in the womb of the wife of Vyasadeva, who is the literary incarnation of Godhead. He's the empowered to write the Vedas. Such a personality. So what would his son be like? A very special soul. He's such a special soul, he doesn't want to come out. I'm not coming out. Fully conscious in the womb. Fully conscious in the womb of his mother. So not until till the father, anyway, we see. What happens next?
He did not. He said he refused to come out unless he was completely, he could be guaranteed he'd be liberated from the influence of Maya. Vyasadeva then assured the child that he would not be influenced by Maya. But the child did not believe his father. I'm not coming out. Who are you? You know, you can't say that I'll be free from Maya. So why did the child not believe his father? For the father was still attached to his wife and children. So the child is aware that this is not an ordinary soul in the womb. Very special soul. He's a fully aware of everything going on around. Fully conscious. Such a great soul, we can look at the biological mechanics of it and think, well, how is that possible? But in a great soul, it doesn't matter what state the body is in. It can be even in a baby form inside the womb. A self-realized soul sees beyond all that. He sees reality as it is. So then Vyasadeva then went to Dwarka and informed Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, about the problem. Everyone comes to Krishna with their problems. You imagine, you know. Krishna, I've got a problem. My child's been in the womb for 12 years. And the Personality of Godhead, at Vyasadeva's request, went to Vyasadeva's cottage, where he assured the child in the womb that he would not be influenced by Maya. So if Krishna himself comes and says, guarantees that. So not until Krishna himself came. The child in the womb had darshan of Krishna. Then he said, okay. Thus assured, the child came out. So imagine the relief of Vyasadeva. Oh, my son. But what does he do? But he immediately went away as a Parabhajakacharya. He took sannyas like that. So after 12 years of waiting, Vyasadeva's, oh, my son, he has natural fatherly affection for his child. It isn't unnatural, even the self-realized souls have affection. You're here. Well, where are you going? I'm leaving. My son. He's calling out in grief and separate, my son. And only the trees echoed that feeling of separation of the father. When the father, very much aggrieved, began to follow his saintly boy. So he's not just, here's Vyasadeva, he's the literary incarnation of the Supreme Lord. His standards and perceptions and affections are on a totally different level to any mundane family affection. So his affection for his son, this son is a saintly person. His affection is far more than just bodily. He wants the association with this great saint. As well, being his son, he's a saint, his child. When the father, very much aggrieved, began to follow his saintly boy, Shukadeva Goswami, the boy created a duplicate Shukadeva, who later entered family life. Therefore the verse. So he had family life, he had children. Therefore, the Shukakanya, or daughter of Shukadeva, mentioned in this verse, in the ninth canto, is the daughter of the duplicate or imitation Shukadeva. The original Shukadeva was a lifelong brahmachari. So what mystic power does this great Shukadeva have? In the verse, Sutta Goswami says, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the great sage Shukadeva Goswami, who can enter the hearts of all. Well, what does that mean? Who can enter the hearts of all. Those of, in the presence of a saintly person, you feel he can read you. No? One has to be humble before a saintly person because one's pride stands up like a towering mountain. No? And those of us who had the great fortune to be in Prabhupada's presence, especially if he just looked at you, sometimes devotees report being in a hole, there'd be 200 devotees in a big temple room. And Prabhupada just glance. And that glance. Devotees feel that they've been scanned is the wrong word. Noticed. Acknowledged. On a level that you never knew existed. But the cost is, the price on that is, that your sense of self-importance, we could say, is somewhat diminished. You feel naked in front of the pure devotee. Not in any weird way, but he sees past everything that you think you are, he sees past it, and he sees you as only he can see you. And when our spiritual life is ripe, when we've actually reached the height, then we'll see ourselves as we are. Pure devotee sees that. One source of his compassion, he sees what you are, and he sees what you think you are. Fool and rascal. All the conditioning. Makes it act like cats and dogs and camels and asses and hogs and basking sharks and aardvarks. All these coverings for our real self. He sees all through all that. I just heard recently I believe it was in India. There's some cat. Someone's house. It might have been Shamsunda told me. I went over to see him in the cottage. So maybe it wasn't India. Maybe it was in the West. Because in the West we keep dogs and cats in the house. And if that dog or cat is in the house of a devotee, great benefit for that soul. Anyway, in someone's house or on the footpath, there was a cat, and Prabhupada kicked this cat hard. Kicked the cat. Oh. Imagine. And the cat was stunned. I don't mean in ecstasy, but whatever, well, maybe it was. It's stunned. And then Prabhupada explained why he'd kicked the cat. He said, the great demigod prayed for a benediction. Took birth as a cat. What was the benediction? Prabhupada didn't say. So what do you think was the benediction? What do you think? Don't nod your heads. Tell me, what did you think the benediction was? Speaker? Huh? The dust of the feet, the devotee? Yeah? So, what greater blessing can there be for a demigod, what to speak of a cat, the soul of a cat, to get the blessing of the pure devotee, that kick. You can't talk philosophy to a cat. There's one of the ceremonies, one of the Vedic ceremonies in the springtime. The princess or the queen, in the presence of the king and all the Brahmins and all the ministers, would go to the farmland or the orchard. And they have a yajna sacrifice, and they kick the tree. Kick the fruit tree. Kick the tree. Again, you can't talk to a tree. Well, you can talk to a tree, but it's very dull. The tree is very, very dull. You kick it. Okay, time to wake up. And it was, remember, time in the ashram, those of you in the ashram, time to wake up. Now, hopefully nobody kicks you, but sometimes we need a shake on the shoulder. I remember in the Berry Place temple, certain devotees were very, very reluctant to get up for Mangal Arati. For me, that was the most, getting up early in the morning was the most difficult time, but I must add, it didn't happen to me, but sometimes, every morning, they come along with the mop, the squeezy mop, you know, on the floor, you know, mopping the floor, because everyone slept on the floor in their sleeping bag. Without a sleeping mat, I must add, we were tough in those days. Just this bag on the mat, just the bag on the floor. No pillows, you know, you used to do this. So you used to clean the floor. And as soon as you heard that, you got up. You know, it was a matter of kind of self-respect, you know, pride. And this smelly, wet kind of, you know, mop going, you know, you didn't want that around you. But some devotees were still very, you know, reluctant to get up. And in some, I mean, one devotee in particular, he's passed away now. He said, "Go away, Prabhu, I'm having Mangal Arati in my sleeping bag." Used to say it on a regular basis. And it came to the point where you had to get up. So, you know, you pick up, the devotee would pick up the corners of the sleeping bag and tip the devotee out. Very ignoble, very ignoble. So best to get up and save your sense of pride, a little self-respect and pride, you know. So, why am I mentioning this, talking about sleeping? This is what happens. Once you get your bus pass, your memory starts to go.
Yes. Yeah, I've forgotten where I was going with that. And the demigod, yes. Yeah, the blessings of the pure devotee. So the blessings of the pure devotee are there. They're inconceivable. Even the kick of the pure devotee. What to speak of his glance? What to speak of his instructions? Well, this is the secret to our spiritual life. So Sutta Goswami is setting the standard, sets the example. Before he begins answering any questions, he offers his respects. And the next verse, well, I believe Kripa Moya is giving class tomorrow. Adiguru. You're giving class tomorrow? Okay. Well, you got another verse with obeisances in it. Let me offer my obeisances unto him, Shuka. So again, obeisances. And the point is that the obeisances don't stop when you finish the prayer. Srila Prabhupada said himself, there was never a time when I felt separation from my Guru Maharaj. He's constantly depending upon the mercy of the spiritual master. And the more we can feel the presence of the spiritual master, the more we will make progress and eventually perceive the presence of Sri Krishna. So we've gone on a bit, and devotees are leaving already. Any question, any comment, any feedback?